you're not talking about meeting, you're talking about interview. Let me apologize that we're starting late. We're supposed to have started at 9:30 in China. I do know that there were two notices sent out, one saying 10 o'clock and another one saying 9:30. But the very last one, Mr. Court, was 9:30. So I'm sorry we're starting a bit late. So we will go straight to apologies and then take a presentation from the Department of Energy by Mr. Mbambo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, those who are here for observing, members of the media. I do believe that this is a very technical process. I am skilled and should allow the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, colleagues, members of the media, all the scholars there. My name is Ramela Bano. I'm the Deputy Director General for the UK. The chairperson has indicated we're going to take you through two presentations, one by the department and the other by Nexa. There was also a request that in the presentation by the department, we also discuss the issues of the national nuclear regulator readiness in terms of taking its role to the rollout of the nuclear program. And so I will then also take the committee through the presentation. I'll first start with the overall presentation from the department and the lead development on the issues of nuclear power program and the nuclear technology in the country. The outline of the presentation, I'm going to take the committee through a historical background of nuclear power in the country, the contribution of nuclear power to the economy. Then I will take the committee on the discussion of the intergovernmental agreement that the country has signed with the various nuclear vendor countries and the implications of South Africa. I'll talk about the investment climate, the skill development, the communication strategy, the integrated nuclear infrastructure review mission that was conducted by the International Atomic Energy Agency for the country, the IAEA. I'll talk about the challenges, and at the end, chapters in the time allowed, there are some extra slides that we included that we would propose to take the committee through. These are non-core applications of nuclear technology. In terms of the background, the committee members will be aware that South Africa is the only country in Africa that has got a nuclear power station, mainly the Kobe nuclear power station that has generated electricity here in the Western Cape. This nuclear power plant was commissioned in the last unit in 1986. It's got an output in terms of the energy of 1.8 gigawatts and it's fully operational. It has operated successfully for more than 30 years and it's one of the efficient and profitable power plants within the Eskom fleet of power stations. Then in 1988, the government approved the National Energy White Paper, which is an overarching government policy that was mapping out the different options of energy that needed to be implemented and rolled out further with specific energy technologies. And in respect of nuclear, the White Paper noted that nuclear is an option that would need to be further investigated and be implemented in line with the integrated resource plan and also making sure that it involves public consultation in the process of dealing with nuclear power. Moving forward, then in 2008, Eskom, as the South African utility, started a procurement as well as a siting process for the nuclear build, wherein it was intended to roll out 40 gigawatts of nuclear power. And the Eskom then started this process mainly to start with the 4 megawatts of nuclear power. The breeding process was then stopped in 2008, after I realized that the financial mechanism and the cost associated with the program were high. Then in 2008, to make sure that we have a coordinated nuclear energy policy, as it has been called in from the Energy White Paper in 1988, government approved the nuclear energy policy in 2008, which provides a framework for government for the implementation of the nuclear build program in a coordinated manner. The framework provides that government, as a key strategic policy objectives, government wants to be self-sufficient in the rollout of the nuclear build program through participation in all the aspects of the nuclear fuel cycle, for peaceful application of nuclear technology to bolster the country's economy and to address the social economic needs of the country. And in this regard, government has proceeded in implementing the nuclear build, and our track record as a country speaks to this. We have operated the Kobe nuclear power station safely for more than 30 years. And it is one of the efficient nuclear power stations that is profitable, that provides the electricity to the Western Cape. And in addition, to make sure that the country will lead in terms of our stature in the peaceful use of the nuclear technology, we have, as a country, operated the Sahari 1 research reactor at the level, successfully for 50 years, and now in March, the country celebrated the anniversary of this research reactor that's producing the medical isotopes for the world's use as well as our national need. And we are number two in the world in terms of our lead in the use of nuclear technology for medical isotopes. And so that is in line with the nuclear energy policy. In terms of effectively implementing the government's strategic objectives that have been identified in the nuclear energy policy for 2008, government approved the integrated resource plan for 2010 to 2030. Which is a government plan for electricity for 20 years that provides a balanced mix of the various energy technologies, including the coal, the renewables, the gas, hydro, as well as nuclear. And in terms of this policy, for nuclear, it allocates that 9.6 gigawatts of power will be generated from nuclear. And indeed, the plan then indicates that by 2023, the country must commission the first unit, with the next unit to follow right up to 2030 in terms of the rolling out of the plan. And what is critical around this plan is that nuclear provides base load electricity, it provides clean electricity, it provides cheap, affordable energy. And indeed, the work that the department has been doing together with the interdepartmental teams within the Energy Security Subcommittee for Cabinet has been to develop the technical strategies which inform government framework for the rollout of the nuclear build program in terms of implementing the nuclear build program. In terms of our key milestones, 2012, the National Development Plan was approved by Cabinet. There's a very important fundamental point that I need to highlight for the committee. The National Development Plan is a government plan, it's a blueprint that provides the guidelines as to what the government's plan going forward for the next 20, 30 years. This plan is informed by various plans specific for specific matters of government. Among the key matters is that it is informed by the IRP that I've talked about, the Integrated Resource Plan, in terms of what is the country's aspiration in terms of rolling out various technologies for making sure that we've got sufficient capacity and sufficient supply for the demand of electricity to the country. What the plan said, the National Development Plan, in terms of nuclear, it recognizes that nuclear provides baseload. It recognizes that it provides clean energy, and indeed, in order for the country to be able to meet the economic growth trajectory identified in the National Development Plan, we need nuclear. But what the plan has said is that in order, before a decision is made on the procurement of the nuclear power, we need to make sure that we do a thorough technical investigation to address the rest of technical issues that form the nuclear fuel cycle. Among others, the plan calls for an investigation on the environmental impact assessment, on the safety of the nuclear technology, on the non-proliferation matters of nuclear technology, on the localization, the industrialization, the skills development, as some of the very key issues that the plan advised need to be thoroughly investigated so that when government takes a decision to procure, government has been informed through this technical investigation. And indeed, in order to make sure that government proceeds with the implementation of nuclear, the Department of Energy has been over the last 8 years been busy working on the technical strategies to create a sufficient and a sound basis as a framework that informs government decision-making process in order to make a decision to procure nuclear. And that work, honorable members, is at an advantage. Many of the technical strategies that inform the entire nuclear fuel cycle to ensure that governments would participate into the entire nuclear fuel chain have been completed. And some are at an advantage of being reviewed and updated to make sure that when these are presented to cabinet to make government decisions, they become government policies. So the government is now ready to proceed with the procurement of nuclear build program because the technical work that informs the decision making has advanced quite substantially and it supports the decisions made to procure the nuclear build. It's a very important point which I believe it's important to emphasize to the members of the committee to make sure that there is no misalignment between the nuclear build program, what the department is doing with the National Development Plan. And in fact, what the department is doing is much aligned with the aspirations of the National Development Plan to make sure that we develop the required baseload from the nuclear build program to ensure that the country can be self-sufficient in terms of the energy security. In terms of also one of the approaches that government approved was that we will take decisions in a phased decision-making approach. In other words, we recognize that the nuclear build is quite a long-term program. That's a program that will leave with the country because in terms of the new generation three nuclear power plant designs, these nuclear power plants have got a design lifespan of 6 years. That is 6 years of an asset that the country will own. You need to invest on it now so that this asset will be with us for the longer period. And in addition, the 6 year design life for the nuclear power plants can be extended to another 20 years. Now, what does that mean? It then gives us quite a correct assessment and indeed a correct position for government to proceed with nuclear power, because we require a base load and we need an asset that's going to be able to produce enough electricity for the country for the longer duration when the asset has been paid off. Generally, these nuclear power plants are paid off within 20 years. You've paid off the asset and now generating electricity for the country. An example that I'd like to illustrate is an example of the Kumbeni nuclear power plant, which I've already alluded to members of the committee, that it is one of the efficient and profitable run nuclear power stations within the Eskom fleet. Why? Because nuclear provides clean baseload electricity and it's got low operational cost, it's got low maintenance cost, it's got low fuel cost, and you operate this asset for 8 years at the very least. And this is a strong case for government to proceed to the rollout of the nuclear program. Some of the key milestones that have been achieved by the country in terms of the rolling out of the nuclear bills is that in 2013, we voluntarily invited the International Atomic Energy Agency to come into the country to conduct what we call the IDF mission, the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review Mission. I'll talk later about this in detail to give members a perspective of how we've rolled out the, how we've implemented the ideas, recommendations, and what is the work going forward that the country is undertaking in this area. And also in 2013, the Department of Energy has been approved as the major procuring agent for the nuclear power program. This is very fundamental because the Department of Energy is the lead on the energy matters. And in terms of the nuclear, it is the lead as well. And therefore, when government takes a decision to procure the nuclear power program, government has taken a decision that that process will be led by government, not by the private sector. It will be led by the Department of Energy working with the government nuclear state-owned entities. In this regard, I'm talking NEPSA, I'm talking ESCOM, I'm talking the National Nuclear Regulator, I'm talking the institutes. All government entities will lead the process in that by the Department of Energy being the procurement agency. One of the key milestones in making sure that we prepare for the nuclear bill, honorable members, the country undertook, completed the emergency preparedness review mission. This is a mission which was invited by the country in order to come and assess the state of readiness of our nuclear emergency infrastructure. We recognize that as a country, we've got an adequate infrastructure to deal with the current problem. But if we are to expand the problem and roll out the 9.6 gigawatts, which is 10 times more than what we have for Quebec, then it is proper and necessary that we undertake these independent assessment by independent external body, In this regard, I'm talking about the International Atomic Energy Agency, which comes and do a peer review on the work that has been undertaken by the country when we are doing the self-assessment. So we first invite the whole government nuclear industry to do thorough work that will generate self-assessment report. And that self-assessment report we then submit to the International Atomic Energy Agency and invite them to come and have a peer review in terms of how they see a state of readiness of our infrastructure to roll out the nuclear program. And so we've done this for that particular process, and once we have done this, we then develop an action plan which is led by the Department of Energy, working with IMAS, the government nuclear industry, to develop the strategy that seeks to address areas of emphasis that would have been identified in these types of actions. And these types of reports, honorable members, they're very important for us because South Africa is a member state of the International Atomic Energy Agency. And so when we expand our nuclear weapon program, we need to make sure that it is informed and it is aligned with our national laws and with international benchmarks, among which the International Atomic Energy then becomes a critical independent body that informs the work that we do. Some of the key milestones that in 2013 the minister inaugurated the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, which is funded in terms of Act 53 of 2008, which is an institution that will manage radioactive waste on a national basis to make sure that as a country we have sufficient disposal options for all the various waste categories. Currently we've got the VALPOT, which operates the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute, the National Radioactive Waste Disposal in the Northern Cape. This repository is only dealing with low and intermediate radioactive waste. And in terms of the long-term radioactive waste, we keep this as a policy matter on site. And this institution that has been now inaugurated, its work is to design, research, and come up with long-term solutions for the radioactive waste. And so we've got, as a country, an institutional capacity that we have built in order to make sure that when we roll out the nuclear program, we've got the necessary resources, we've got the necessary expertise. And indeed, the expertise already exists in South Africa because we've operated the VALPOT waste resources research for many years under NEXA. Then in 2018, some of the key milestones that have been achieved for the program is that, as we indicated, the country is a member state to the IEA, and we are a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty. We use the nuclear technology for peaceful purposes. And when we then are going to procure the nuclear program, I must emphasize, honorable members, that the nuclear technology is unique in terms of its regulation. It's strictly regulated by international laws, by international best practice, as well as our national laws. And so in order for us to exchange this critical technology that we require, we need to make sure that we sign intergovernmental agreements with the various countries. And indeed, the Department through its working has been working on various nuclear vendor countries that have been identified that offer the nuclear technology similar to the technology that we are using in the name of PWR as a policy matter, that we will use the pressurized water reactor going forward into the nuclear belt. And we've identified these countries, they have that type of technology, and they have expressed interest in collaborating with South Africa, and they have expressed interest in participating in the nuclear belt country, in the nuclear belt program. And to mention these countries, we signed an intergovernmental agreement with the Russian Federation, France, the People's Republic of China, the USA, South Korea. And we are also at an advanced stage of negotiation with some of the two countries that also have expressed interest in participating in the South African nuclear power program. And that is Japan and Canada, to make sure that the procurement process, when it starts, is an open, transparent, competitive, cost-effective procurement process that is aligned, compliant with our national laws for procurement. And therefore, these are the countries that we have signed intergovernmental agreements with them. I'll elaborate on the intergovernmental agreement, but it's very critical that I inform the honorable members that the intergovernmental agreement, they are not the deals. They are not the deal. When you have signed an intergovernmental agreement, what you have just signed is a cooperation agreement where both countries express interest of collaborating with one another on matters of nuclear. You only begin to have a deal when you have started the procurement process and you have signed a contract. At this stage, there is no contract that has been signed with any of these countries to implement the nuclear deal. So there is no deal that has been signed with the government as to who of the potential member countries will finally implement the nuclear deal. That stage will happen in the future. When the proposal process has started, the bids have been issued, vendor countries have bidded, the bids have been evaluated, and a final decision is made as to the strategic partner or the strategic partners that will roll out the nuclear program. It's a fundamental point that I believe is crucial to elaborate on for the committee members to have an appreciation that when last year, when the development signed an intergovernmental agreement with Russia, there was speculation in the media that the government has signed a deal with Russia. This is not the case. Government only signed an intergovernmental agreement. And in future, once the procurement process has been launched and the final outcome has come, a decision will come as to who is the strategic partner or strategic partners for South Africa to implement the nuclear deal program. So that's a significant, honorable member, for the nuclear cooperation agreements or the nuclear framework agreements. In line with the preparations for the rollout of the nuclear deal program, having signed the intergovernmental agreement, then South Africa, the government invited the prospective nuclear vendor countries to come with their vendors in South Africa to demonstrate to a high-powered delegation of South African nuclear professionals coming from the various government departments, the state-owned entities, as well as universities, to indeed interrogate the technological offering of all these vendor countries to determine which is providing the value for the nuclear build program, to make sure that government achieves its strategic objectives to participate in the entire nuclear build chain, to industrialize South Africa, to bolster the economy to make sure that the country will retain our status as the lead nation in terms of our nuclear technology capability. So that's a milestone that has been achieved. We have completed the pre-procurement phase by concluding the vendor parades with all the prospective vendor countries that have expressed interest to participate in the nuclear build program, to ensure that our process is transparent, is open, and it's fair. It allows all the countries to make their proposals. As I've indicated, the pre-procurement process has concluded. Now, in 2015, our minister has announced in a budget vote speech that South Africa now is ready to commence, to start the actual procurement process in the second quarter of 2015. And we expect that this actual procurement process will be finalized by the end of this year, wherein the outcome as to who will be the strategic partners or strategic partner for South Africa will be, that will then allow the contracting process to start beyond the end of 2012. 2012, a decision will be made to select a strategic partner or strategic partners, and then going forward, the contracting will then commence with the selected strategic partner or strategic partners. That's a big milestone where we are now at this stage in 2015 and going forward. Honorable members, then I'd like also to take you through about the contribution of nuclear technology to the South African economy. There have been several studies that have been done in order to assess the value that the country would derive out of implementing the nuclear build program. And these are the studies. One of them is SAPRON. That's a study that was undertaken in 2008 when the ESCOM was leading the nuclear build for Nuclear One. And as a department, we've also conducted the economic impact of the nuclear localization. And this study was completed in 2014. And also the socio-economic deep dive study has also been done. In terms of the estimations that we see is that jobs during the 10-year construction period for the program of 10 gigawatts of nuclear, this will depend on, of course, on the localization content that will finally be approved when the government takes a decision to procure. But if we make an assumption that say 80% of the program is localized, this is what we're seeing, is that approximately 30,000 jobs per annum, direct job will be created, and that will total to 180,000 jobs that includes direct and indirect as well as induced jobs. During the operational time of 8 years, there's an approximate 12,000 direct jobs totaling to 30,000 jobs. In that, there is of course an indirect effect, because what we're talking about here, we're talking about directly nuclear. And we must highlight this to the committee to say there is a spin-off. Once you generate electricity with nuclear, it generates other jobs in the economy, and you couldn't quantify it. But indeed, there will be a positive effect of the rolling out of the nuclear build program. Then, in terms of the baseload supply, I've already talked about the baseload supply. I've already talked about the baseload supply. Members one is indicated in the just an integrated resource plan. I've already spoken about it, I'm not going to emphasize on it. On the next slide, I've already discussed the issue and the significance of the intergovernmental agreements that have been signed, and we are there elaborating on what they contain. The vendor point, I've already covered this, the role that they play, and also the skills development that is required to make sure that we've got sufficient capacity to deal with the demands of the problem. On the climate of investment, we've done several studies to ensure that we can determine the bankability of the program, and all the studies we have done have indicated that the program is financeable. However, we need to engage with the market to make sure that we can have all the information on the financeability of the program, and that will only be tested when the procurement process has started. On the skills development, I've already talked about the localization content, but in terms of the skills, this is what has been determined, and it shows the peaks as to when we'll have the highest number of skills required. And it's around year 13, and we'll require about 23,000 of artisans. The various categories that are indicated there that will be required to roll out the program. The participants that are including government as well as other departments are involved in the development of the national skills development, and is already the Department of Energy is implementing the national skills development through sending in trainees for focus nuclear training into the various countries, among which we've mentioned China, Russia, France, South Korea, and the rest of other countries wherein we'll be sending in and receiving cooperation in areas of training. On the matter of communication, there is various perceptions, and these have been assessed in terms of what the people believe in terms of the knowledge of the nuclear technology. And these are the stats that provide a need for us to make sure that we can accelerate our communication strategy rollout as well as stakeholder engagement. It gives comparisons from 2011 and 2013 comparative to the UK, and you can see that in terms of the speed. This is also same the speed. Honorable Chairperson, this is now the key one that I just need to take the committee through. The integrated nuclear infrastructure review, the INIR, which I've already spoken about. It is an integrated nuclear infrastructure review for an assessment of the country's infrastructure as it relates to the readiness to start the procurement, the constructing, and the operation of the nuclear power plant. We need to recognize that South Africa voluntarily invited the IEA to come and do this because we are already a country that's got an operating nuclear power plant. This is a methodology developed by the IEA, and it assesses the countries along 19 key milestone issues that cover national position, nuclear safety, safeguards, regulatory infrastructure, radiation protection, electrical grid, as well as procurement as part of the 19 issues. It's important to emphasize the point that the INIR is an INIR review mission. It is not an audit, but it is a peer review by the independent experts of the IEA of the country's readiness to roll out the nuclear bill program. It is not a quantitative approach, it is a qualitative approach. In terms of the rationale, we invited the IEA with the recognition that we have last constructed the nuclear power plant in the last 30 years, which is COVID, it also created an integrated national platform to pull in together the experts from government nuclear sector as well as government department to develop self-assessment report. We also invited the mission because we recognize there have been global changes in the nuclear safety, nuclear security, and the financing scheme other than what was done in the past 30 years. And we've seen some of the advanced countries experiencing challenges with their nuclear equipment. So we wanted to make sure we've got a better informed understanding of what are the issues and how we address them as a country. And also to ensure that we develop our young professionals. This was completed in 2013, and in terms of the actions the government is taking forward, arising out of this report, is that we're still going to present this report to the Energy Security Cabinet Subcommittee, as well as the whole cabinet, to discuss the report. That's the work that we're going to do. So it's still undergoing government processes to make sure that it's self-incarnate. And also, the outputs that we receive out of this report, the lessons learned, the recommendations, we've integrated into the government work that we are doing to develop the nuclear bill program. As I've already earlier spoken about the technical strategies, these are indeed addressing the issues that some of them will derive out of this exercise. And it's an ongoing process. Honorable members, I believe it's important, having given this presentation, to also highlight what are some of the challenges that the nuclear build is facing. Is the funding for capacity building and training for the program to government sector, now that we're going to start the procurement process to make sure that all the government institutions are ready to take up their roles to effectively lead in the various areas for the rollout of the nuclear build program. This is because there's budget cuts that has been implemented across government in terms of making sure that we operate effectively. And so this also does have an effect in terms of the capacity building that we require from the various government entities. But we are doing exceptional work in terms of already targeting various areas where we're sending in people to gain the required knowledge. In this regard, the Department of Energy is engaging with the National Treasury to make sure that we find ways in which the program can be sufficiently funded so that the government has sufficient capacity to deliver on this program. The most important thing is that at this stage, the government is ready to start the procurement. Extensive work has been done that is technically sound to ensure that when the cabinet makes a decision, it is informed by the technical work that is done by exceptionally very experienced professionals drawn out from the government nuclear industry as well as the sector, as well as government officials that informs this entire nuclear program. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, I'd like to thank you. I recognize the Chairperson has indicated I've got 10 minutes. I would have liked to also take the committee through some of the non-power applications of nuclear technology. However, I'll leave that for another opportunity where we can also provide the honorable members with other applications of nuclear technology, because what I've been focusing on has been mainly on the power generation side of the nuclear technology. There is also daily applications of nuclear technology, which are very critical for all the people in the medical application, in the agricultural sector, in the service industry sector, which cover the entire spectrum of the work and the need, why the country needs to move with the nuclear green program. I'd like to thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. We are ready. I can introduce myself. I'm basically as I'm the CFO of Nexa, acting CEO at this point. The CEO is out of the country. With me is Robina Lutsui, who is in planning and strategy. We intend doing the work partly as a team. So, guided by the guidelines that we're giving, Chair, we will split the presentation as follows. The brief overview of the history, Mr. Rotsui will take us through that. And then the next plan to ensure it is prepared for the nuclear build. Rotsui will take us through that. As part of that, I will come in terms of the national skills and training, and then the supply development methods, as well as challenges identified in the process of that change. If allows, we can hand over to you to comment first.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, honorable members. All protocol observed. I'm going to go through the presentation as in detail as it was requested. And I think the one of the main topics you just asked was to give a brief overview of the history of Nexa. The overview will be brief and will be more biased towards capabilities for the nuclear program. Nuclear was originally the Atomic Energy Board, which was established in 1956, that is after the World War I. And its main objective was to perform nuclear research and to the South African nuclear authority at that time. And that's when the Pelander site was acquired in 1959. At that time, the main objective of the program was to develop and refine the South African nuclear raw materials, which is uranium, promotion of nuclear power, development of internalization of nuclear technology in industry, medicine, geology, and agriculture, and basic research in support of the above capabilities. We know that from this program, we had some initiatives that were Kuberg was originated, also the Safari 1, which was one of the outcomes of this program, and also South African capability in the medicine and the pharmaceuticals, and also in the armament industry was one of the outcomes of this program. And next time we have Safari number 1, which is an open-source reactor.
it was part of Atom for Peace. I think this year is very significant for this reactor because it has achieved 50 years of safe operation. So, you know, it shows capability in our country of really developing technology and utilizing it in a safe fashion. And I mean, 50 years operation is quite a significant achievement for our country as a nuclear country. Operations which are developed as part of the nuclear fuel cycle at that time was that the fluorine plant was in operation in the 1980s. This is important for enrichment of uranium. The conversion plant, which is actually to prepare uranium to be enriched, was operated from 1984 to 1996. It was decommissioned in 1996. Also, a semi-commercial Z plant that in South Africa had enrichment capability, which was operated from 1987 and decommissioned. From 1995. South Africa had as well the PW Power Fuel Fabrication Plant, which was in operation from 1986 to 1995 as decommissioned. We should remember that these capabilities, at that time, South Africa couldn't be supplied with fuel for Quebec from outside. So Nexa was integral in making sure that Quebec is kept running and the fuel to Quebec is supplied. That ensures security of supply of Quebec at that time, especially when it was basically required. And Nexa also developed fabrication capability for the Safari fuel and the target plate, which we use for the isotope production. We still have that capability and continue developing that. And one of the important activities for Nexa since inception was the operations of Falkwoods, with the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Facility from 1986, and that currently will be handed over to the Radioactive Disposal Institute, which is recently established. Just to highlight areas where it has had full competency in the fuel cycle, in the uranium enrichment, which is decommissioned, the fabrication, that means we could at a certain point be able to supply quality fuel to Quebec over a number of years before the market opened up and then we had to merge, we had to continue the supply. And also the initial program, which you know that was to get decommissioned. As I mentioned, that one of our key flagships in operations, which is handed over to the Nuclear Institute, Radioactive Waste Institute, is the operation and disposal of the low-level waste and intermediate low-level waste. So we have shown capability in this space with no incidents in the past, and we plan that this will be a sustainable solution to deal with this problem. One of the important outcomes from Nexa focusing on peaceful use of nuclear, and that was quite turning the sword into plowshare, was the establishment of NTP Regulator, which was established in 2003. 100% owned by Nexa, so it's a dominant entity, and it served 60 countries in the supply of chemical pharmaceuticals. I mean, it's one of the leading countries in the world, and there's quite a benefit for the country in this business, and then we intend to advance this space and take advantage of the market so that we can be leading in this space. So this is one area where we can show our willingness to really advance and really lead in the world. And that to show also the capability that is within our country. And one of the important companies which we have is the Pelican Metal. I'll go quickly over the slides, I've shown the importance of it, but it's where our strategic asset of chlorine is. Perkem is the only country in the southern hemisphere which can produce petrochemicals from fuel spar. And, you know, it's strategic in terms of the fuel cycle, so we need to strengthen this organization to make sure that we have capability to, when we need it, to restore our nuclear fuel cycle. As this diagram is showing, you know, that it's quite important to use fluorine in our uranium conversion process. One of the important things to show the seriousness of our country in the peaceful use of nuclear, from 2001, we've been planning to convert the Safari reactor from using to start using low enriched uranium, which is important for non-proliferation. And this program has been successful. South Africa is the leading, Safari 1 is the leading reactor in terms of changing from high enriched to low enriched uranium in the production of isotopes. So this is another indication of our country taking a lead in innovative way, which includes the seriousness in compliance with the Bilateral Treaty and ensuring non-proliferation of nuclear technology and nuclear material. I'll give a quick overview of NEXA's current activities following. NEXA specifically is focusing on three focus areas, which is the radiation science applications. That's where we, most of the new products like the radioisotopes and fluorine chemistry are being researched and new applications being sought, which can be exploited in the market. And also the hosting of the nuclear program, which is mainly Tembi and other collaboration activities, mainly benefiting the biological initiatives in the country. And also the nuclear power, which is mainly focused on manufacturing and the nuclear fuel cycle. I think our main area of physics and research, which is quite established over the years, is in the radiation and reactor physics, the beam-like physics material characterization, where capabilities are well entrenched within NEXA. Radiochemistry and radiopharmaceuticals, I mean, we have good outputs and performing companies like NTP. The fluorine chemistry, which is still basically available for us, the plasma technology, and the front end of the nuclear fuel cycle, and the radioactive waste management, which should be handed to the institute. And over the years, Africa has been collaborated with many organizations internally and internationally to entrench knowledge within the industry. As you have mentioned, that with our relationship with the government departments, DTI, DECO, DTI, and DST, the Science Councils, we have a relationship with Ntemba Labs, CSFR, the Media and MinTech, many universities and academic hospitals, especially when it comes to the internalization of radiopharmaceuticals. And also in the private sector, we have a service relationship with ESCOM, and also the medical bodies, including also the professional bodies like NIASA. And internationally, we have strong connection with the IEA, AFRA, and we collaborate with other institutions and universities in the world. And we represent South Africa through the delegation from the UN various institutions and the collaborative programs. As I mentioned, NEXA has capabilities which are already in terms of measurement of radioactivity and effective testing, blood verification, nuclear material safeguards, which is over the years proven that we have a narrow system which has protected our nuclear technology and nuclear materials, radio protection services, and also the manufacturing because of the SSM accreditation. And over the years, we've been seeing engineers, scientists, technicians, and artisans. As I've mentioned previously, business which we, you know, has huge opportunity to be further exploited. I mean, currently the main entity group sales focus is about 1.07 billion rand. And for the IT group sales, it's about 700 million. And 90% of the revenue is actually paid. I think that's what we probably have to do. It's quite a potential which can be further strengthened. As I've mentioned, fluorine is strategic and it's being used also as planned in medications like the ARVs, is integral part of it, to improve the performance of material relative to pharmaceuticals and electronics. And it's quite important to have that capability as a country. The next question which was raised by what is Nexa's plan to ensure it's prepared to propose new build program and project today. As we know that Nexa is mandated by the Nuclear Energy Act to do R&D, research and development of new technology in South Africa, and GST has also developed NERDI, which is Nuclear Energy Research Development and Innovative Strategy, which also look at research and development in the interbuild program. So Nexa is quite geared to participate in that program. So the research and development can also expand to support the interbuild program. As we are aware that Nexa has, within the constraints of its current budget, managed to be accredited as SME 8 and SME 3. And also having an SME N stamp, which made it qualified to the design of the product, that has to be strengthened to be able to enhance localization of this process. Next, the rest of the years, participated in training of engineers, dentists, technicians, and artisans, and it has facilities to do that, but those still need to be strengthened to support the nuclear build. And next time we use the renewable, we also play a big role in the supply chain, especially localization, industrialization, the taking advantage of the current capabilities. And one of the important areas for next to stand is in the nuclear fuel cycle. This is South Africa had capability before, and I think we are going through a process to do feasibility studies of the reestablishment of this capability, which we good at the certain time. And we are processing trying to collect the preliminary nuclear assessment from Nexa, which we manage to make sure that we strengthen the areas where still need to be strengthened. And the future plans, which are going to as I said, that the readiness program, we are busy managing it into level where we have to close the gaps, where we have to make sure that Nexa will be fully meet the needs of the nuclear belt. As expected, and also to ensure the secure supply of any new fuel and heavy plate for the Safari reactor, and also develop strategies for making sure the secure supply also to the new build, and increase the civil engineering reactor, which is part of the new build as well, and also to demonstrate certain capabilities which we have already at an advanced level. And one of the key ones is to expand the work of Intemi, which has shown and improved new products in the realm of the pharmaceutical. And also to secure sustainability of Pelican eventually. I'll hand over to Zeus to continue the presentation. Thank you. Thanks, Chair. We, with regards to the national skill training and development, with specific reference to the program, what has happened today, the areas that we focusing on in terms of collaboration with other countries where they have already traveled the route that we want to travel, in this instance of referring to Russia to start with, focus areas is research and development, safety and regulation and advanced manufacturing. And there are subcategories within that where there are opportunities for us to learn. starting 2,500, estimated 2,500 human resources in terms of personnel. I'm talking technical personnel. Those over a 5-year period, we're looking at plus 1,150 engineers, looking at about plus 300 scientists, looking at plus 650 technicians, and plus 400 analysts. So those are the requirements over a 5-year period, in terms of the requirements for the program. Going forward, with regard to agreement with China, there are a couple of I'm not going to go to each and everyone in China in the interest of time, but there are a couple of training programs that have been agreed upon. This basic training ranges between 1 and 5 days. There's a couple of areas under which we deal with it, codes, radiation protection, etc. And those are the areas with China that we have got an agreement with where we can send our people to. Still continuing with agreement with China on the training and development. There are on the NPP generic mechanical equipment, there's a whole lot of list of those. Which I'm highlighting China is the clear safety regulated system because we can learn from different countries in terms of their basic knowledge of project management, quality assurance system, safety culture, etc. On the specialized training that ranges between 2 and 6 days, again in China, there's a couple of programs, I'm not going to go through each one, but those are to do with advanced passive and design programs, and those are the ones that are highlighted in this area. And as we go along, we start with a simple 1 to 5 days, talking to in terms of 15 to 120 days, which is much more involved. Again, these are the design, engineering design courses that we've got agreement with China to. On the job training, we've just had a marathon. One can theorize about it and say, when you go to polish off, you need to up your pace, etc., etc. But the theory is good, but the practical doing all the thing is the ultimate. So, on the job training, very critical. 15 to 120 days in China. There we talk about manufacturing technology in terms of the areas, construction technology, project management, as well as technical training. To date, there are 50 South Africans that are in China as we speak. They are receiving the basic training. 20 are from NEXA. Of the 50, 20 are women. Of the 20 from NEXA, 10 are women. So that's what is happening as we speak now. Again, continuing with the particular training and development for skills in preparation for the program as well as our current operation. These are some of the training that and strategies that we are undertaking. Other than training, we have got a NEXA Learning Academy. We not only train for NEXA, but we train for also external parties within South Africa. Radiation protection training, national key point security training, technical technology partners, and with that NEXA Learning Academy, we're also raising funding. There is a need for funding to enable NEXA to support the nuclear program in that regard. In other words, what we're saying is the training in general and the specific training that will be targeted to the program, and once we do that particular specific training, then we'll be needing specific dedicated funds to deal with that. In terms of the supply development check, which is generally referred to as enterprise supply development, what we have done today is strategy has been developed in terms of the policies and procedures which have been approved and implemented at the NEXA. There are transformation targets which are in line with the empowerment codes, etc. to contribute 3% of net profit to the supply development enterprise in terms of programs with our supply chain processes, and 40% of the total spend to be 51% back owned. 10% of the entire spend to be from 30% black women-owned companies, 8% of the spend to be based with empowerment suppliers. So those are the targets which are in support of the action target and going forward in terms of the ESG initiatives in the climate plan. Still within that, the localization aspect, which localization in as far as the problem is concerned, and the end game is that we may end up with 50% localization. However, we will not start with 50% because there's experiential, experiential and learning curve. We will start 20, 10, 20, 30, up to 50% when we complete in terms of the localization aspect. Noting that when we commence, there will be a lot of civil work that needs to be conducted, and in South Africa, we are not short of civil construction engineering companies to do this kind of work. So that's part of this. And what is the process that we have to understand is identify the skills gap and to provide specific training in that regard. Job creation, of course, is one of the ultimate in terms of this kind of issues. Establishment of new enterprises and job creation, SME as well as industrialization, where we are looking at developing black youth, women, and physically disabled enterprises. Three tier system is what we're talking about when we're talking about enterprise supply development. The tier system, what it indicates as you go from start to the end, there's much more wider scope and of localization and empowerment. So tier one is systems and subsystems and service, then tier two is the component manufacturing, and then tier three is maintenance of repairs, which is an ongoing maintenance of repairs as well, and then maintenance of the plant, etc. To round it up, Chair, with the last point, or last point is the challenges identified, and when we talk of a problem, we talk of or a project. There are variables that are a given. You need to have an end state of what you achieve, what to achieve with the program. In this case, the delivery of nuclear programs with its all its activities that go with it and other processes that go with it. And then there need to be milestones, in other words, to measure as you go in terms of how far you are. We are on track, we are not on track. And then thirdly, there are resources that we need for the program. And those resources could be human resources, technical resources, more importantly also financial resources. So and those are the requirements of the program. And at this time, what we've done has been within the means of what we have, but as we up the game, in terms of what Mr. Barber has referred to with the procurement studies, we did need to do a parallel process in terms of upping the game in terms of these traditional activities. And to do those kind of activities, we think that we propose that there should be a dedicated fund that is meant to do the development of the program instead of the establishment of the program. So that is a very important aspect of the program implementation, because to establish a program management office, you need sort of resources to do that. And to establish that such that as soon as you complete the programming process, you hit the ground running from that particular process. So I'm highlighting this aspect because it's a critical aspect that we just need the timing thereof in terms of having a dedicated fund to skill capacity and capability. Again, the training we've spoken about, that is ongoing. As I said, as the problem commences, we need to be very specific training, not generic in terms of the training that will be undertaken. Multiple members of the extra safari one will grow and extend into that. Cycle of it is a user requirement specification for the extra tuna in that regard. Nuclear fuel cycle. Previous studies have been undertaken with regard to the development of the nuclear fuel cycle plant, and as this is where it gets done, so that we are not waiting to start doing anything. As soon as all the other activities are around the park, then all this will run in parallel. So that will be the end of our presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
you, Chairperson, honorable members. I'd like to take you through the state of readiness of the National Nuclear Regulator in terms of the nuclear build program. This is the outline of the presentation. I'll deal with the regulatory framework readiness and human resource and skills development readiness, look into the international relations and cooperation readiness and cooperation, and also look into the challenges. In terms of the regulatory framework readiness, a self-assessment was carried out in 2010 with the assistance of the IA tools. The number of gaps were identified in the regulatory framework. Subsequent to that, an action plan was developed to address the gaps, mainly the effectiveness of the regulations and alignment of the regulatory framework with international best practice. The regulator is also busy with the new regulations that were developed. The latest set of these were approved by the NR board in its 29th of April board meeting. These are indeed now undergoing the processing by the department for final promulgation by the minister. Witnesses were identified and were also in the legislation framework for the NMR in terms of giving the regulator sufficient power to impose commensurate penalties on the transgressions for the regulatory requirements. And these are some of the areas that are being tightened through the amendment of the NMR Act. A draft amendment to the NMR Act has been submitted to the Minister of Energy in 2014 and will be in effect by mid-2017. That's depending on the processes that this legislation has to go through. Both Fukushima, a number of regulatory guidance documents have also been developed and published to assist in the licensing of the nuclear fuel build, have been developed by the regulator. There's continuous interaction with international counterparts in terms of the licensing philosophy, especially taking into consideration the lessons learned from the Fukushima accident. The NMR participated in the Energy Security Subcommittee of Cabinet, working groups, and the nuclear vendor parties to ensure that it takes part in the discussion around the technologies that are being offered to South Africa for the nuclear build, solely for the purpose of ensuring that these technologies are safe enough to be licensable within the Republic of South Africa through satisfying the National Nuclear Regulatory Requirements. In terms of human resource and skills development readiness, during the 2013-14 financial year, the NMR increased its staff by 23% from 93 staff complement to 125 staff complement. The purpose was to capacitate the regulator to address the current capacity problem and to carry out the Quebec steam generator replacement licensing project and also to prepare for the nuclear build program. The NMR had to revamp the inspector training and the qualifications program to be on par with the international norms and standards. Also, in terms of this, it is utilization of the bilateral agreement to leverage training opportunities for the NNR staff. For example, the US NRC, the European Commission, China, and France, and also multilateral agreements with the IAEA. The purpose to establish a center of excellence for the nuclear safety and security is at an advanced stage by the NNR. The center will be 100% owned by the NNR to be hosted by one of the universities, and it will involve participation of many South African universities and the overseas ones. So that's an area of readiness. In addition, the regulator, the memorandum of understanding are being signed by the interested universities and audit of academic and research capability. Infrastructure and facilities in these universities was carried out by the national peer regulator, and a good picture has emerged of where the capability and gaps exist locally. The international counterparts, that is the universities and research centers, will augment the gaps that have been identified by the NNR. The center is envisaged to stand on three key areas. It will provide teaching and learning in the nuclear safety and security, research and development, as well as a capacity to provide consulting services in the area of nuclear safety and security. The ultimate aim of the Center of Excellence is to have a homegrown cater of skills to support both the NNR and the industry, specifically on areas of nuclear safety and nuclear security and radiation protection. In terms of public assurance and emergency preparedness, the public safety information forums are well underway, and they've been established and are maintained in order to effectively share information on nuclear safety and emergency planning and preparedness. These are the forums that are established within the areas where there are nuclear sites, like within the Quebec and NEXA. The NNR continues to implement the regulatory emergency planning and preparedness exercises to provide public assurance of nuclear safety. The NNR has recently established the Emergency Control and Response Center to deal with the preparedness in the event of a nuclear or radiological emergency. On the area of international collaboration, the NNR continues to play a leading role in the regional forums, such as the FMRBA, which is a forum for nuclear regulatory bodies association, with a view to strengthen the regulatory regime of the continent. The post-Fukushima recommendations emphasize the importance of transboundary regulation, and as such, the NNR continues to invest in strengthening relationships within the region in preparation for the nuclear event. In order to leverage international experience and collaboration to capacitate the NNR technically, bilateral agreements were signed and continue to be utilized by the NNR to be on par with the best of the best. The focus is to partner more with the countries that are preparing to license new nuclear power plants, like South Africa, or those who are in the process of doing that already. In this regard, experience countries like the US, France, Russia, China, Finland, the Republic of Korea, UK, and some of the countries are working closely with the NNR in this area. The NNR received assistance in training cost-free from the US, France, China, and the European Commission in strengthening our technical capability. And this is indeed to assure that when the program starts, we have enough skills to deal with the problem. The NNR participates in the multinational design evaluation program, that is the MDEP, which is a forum where regulatory bodies exchange information and form common approach to licensing different reactor designs under the auspices of the OECD NEE. It is notable that the NNR is the only one of the three regulators from a non-OECD countries who is the member of the MDEP forum. In addition, Honorable Chairperson, the NNR CEO is the Vice Chairperson of the Regulatory Cooperation other hospitals of the IEA. Feedback from this one has proven to be very valuable from the NIR exploration for a new nuclear build licensing. The NIR represents South Africa as a signatory to the Convention on Nuclear Safety, which is a peer review forum on nuclear safety issues. And this helps to ensure, this helps to match up the NIR strengths and weaknesses against its international counterparts. And so far, the feedback that we have been getting from these discussions points to the regulator on an upward trajectory. And indeed, it does bolster our regulatory capacity by us participating in all these international forums to exchange information with our international regulators. And Chairperson and honorable members, with regard to the work that the regulator is doing, we also challenges. And it is important that we highlight these challenges to the committee. The funding for the NIR has always been one of the issues in our contention, because the NIR receives the revenue from two streams, mainly from the operators of the nuclear facilities, and it receives grants from the fiscus. However, what we've been experiencing is that the grant from the fiscus has been declining steadily over the past financial year 2014-15 to 2016-17. And in light of these mandatory budget cuts that are instituted countrywide by the national treasury, this, of course, the Chairperson have challenges for the NIR in order for it to be able to carry out its activities as well as the country's international obligations that have been assigned to the national nuclear regulator. For the NIR to roll out its full scheme readiness program for the new build, the size of the NIR may need to be more than double the total, totaling around 300 staff members. We've indicated the current system is 125, but when the new build is announced, they will need to ramp up in terms of capacity. But it's important to highlight to the committee that the NIR is sufficiently capacitated to deal with the existing program, and we've been gradually, in a much more coordinated and measured manner, been ramping up the appointment of the required skills, the training of the required professionals, and work is ongoing in that regard to make sure that we've got a sufficient regulator that will deal with the program. In this regard, the operation of the Center of Excellence that I've already discussed will only be feasible if more funding is made available to the NIR so that it deals with its capacity. It's important to highlight that the funding constraint that the NIR does experience due to budget cuts, if this persists, it may limit the NIR's regulatory ability to carry out its mandate. With that, Chairperson, I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity.
supported the integrated resource plan, more nuclear energy plants and needs to be commissioned from 2023/2024. We are in 2015. Although nuclear power does provide a low carbon based load alternative, South Africa needs a thorough investigation on the implementation of nuclear energy, including its costs, financing options, institutional arrangements, safety, environmental costs and benefits, localization, employment opportunities, and uranium enrichment and fuel fabrication possibilities. While some of these issues were investigated in the IRP, a potential nuclear fleet will involve a level of investment unprecedented in South Africa. An in-depth investigation into the financial viability of nuclear energy is thus vital. The National Nuclear Energy Executive Coordinating Committee, NNECC, chaired by the Deputy President, will have to make a final stop-go decision on that for the nuclear future, especially after actual costs and financing options are revealed. Chair, I'd like to draw your attention to the IRP, which IRP update of 2013. The reason I'm doing this is that this government has said that this is not official government policy, it never has been. The department has confirmed that the IRP 2013 update was never in fact submitted to cabinet and therefore was never actually rejected, it's just never been considered. This is important because I'm going to read from the IRP and it says exactly what's stated in the NDP. I'm reading from the summary on page 8 and it says, the nuclear decision can possibly be delayed. The revised demand projections should suggest that no nuclear baseload capacity is required until after 2025 and for lower demand not until earliest 2055. And that the alternative options such as regional hydro that can fulfill the requirements and allow further exploration of shale gas potential before prematurely committing to technology that may be redundant if electricity demand expectations do not materialize. So while Mr. Mbabe has made the clear point that the NDP and the IRP are aligned, he's actually referring to an IRP that was never actually accepted by government. So we have a very specific problem here in that the NDP doesn't actually support government procurement of nuclear, especially not the document that it's referring to. So government has said the IRP 2010 is founding document on the procurement of nuclear, and yet the NDP actually refers to the 2013. So either the 2013 went to cabinet, was adopted in its government policy as referred to in the NDP, or it isn't. So is the NDP the document you're referring to, or is it the IRP 2010? I think the minister and the department have a quagmire that they're going to have to figure out and explain to the African people. Because Chair, what they said to me is that this looks like a political decision that we're now backpacking to retrofit so-called government policy to support. In actual fact, it's not support. It says so in the NDP, and referring to the policy document that's never actually accepted. So that's the first point of meaning to come. Chair, the next point I'd like to raise specifically is this issue of financing and procurement. The department has said they've been working quite hard on this for quite a while and they've agreed to start the procurement process. I submitted questions to the Minister of Finance on the 20th of, before the 20th of February and before the 17th of April to receive these various, very broad responses. My questions were around financing and how government plans to finance the nuclear deal. And this is the response from Treasury. There's been ongoing engagement between the departments. As indicated, government has undertaken a careful and thorough analysis of financing options to ensure the affordability and long-term sustainability of the fiscal and financial soundness of state-owned entity like Eskom. The work is taking place under the auspices of the Nuclear Energy Technical Committee, which is led by the Department of Energy and comprises of representatives from various departments, including National Treasury. In response to how National Treasury was going to fund, National Treasury said, we have certainly highlighted the importance of undertaking a thorough assessment, given that it would be a substantial financial commitment and that the procurement process to be followed must be mapped out in detail, fully compliant legally and drawing on international best practices. Chair, what we have before us today is not that. So it's very strange, Chair, that we are wanting to buy something which we don't know the cost of, we don't know how we're going to pay for it. Now generally, Jay, if you compare this to anyone buying an automobile, you kind of know the price of the car and you know which bank is going to finance it. So how are we, even in a conversation today, when there's not a single amount of clarity on exactly what we are procuring? Are we procuring one reactor, two reactors, four reactors, six reactors, eight reactors? What is that going to cost us? And we've just gone through an extensive roadshow of all of these suppliers. You cannot tell me that the department has no clue exactly how much the potential cost is going to be associated around this.
So Chairman, I must ask and I'm referring back to the NDP. It says with a refined assessment of cost and financing models, we must base our decision on nuclear. And yet the department has announced, and the minister has announced, that we're going ahead with procurement when we don't know, or we don't have those very specific key things in place. What is it going to cost? What are the financial arrangements? It seems to me, Chair, that we have, I think it's the donkey before, or the horse before the donkey, or the cart before the donkey, whatever the analogy is. And I find it deeply troubling. How do we buy something we don't know the cost and we don't know how we're going to pay for it? Chairman, I think the other key issue here is on transparency. The Minister, the President, and the Department have ongoingly told us that this will be a transparent, accountable process. And yet, Chairman, I've had to run around like a headless chicken trying to get hold of that INIR report, which was referred to by Mr. Mbambo. Now, what's very strange is that the INIR report from Dubai is publicly available on the international website of the IAEA, as are the subsequent reports for many other countries. The South African report is classified. In questions to the department on where this report is, it was actually concluded at the end of the fourth parliament. The department took the undertaking to provide this report to parliament. It has never done so. I've subsequently asked the minister for the document. She promised to provide it to me. The document has never been forthcoming. I then have to subsequently submit a PIE application. The PIE application is present and referred back to the Department of Energy. So if we're talking about transparency, where is this document? It's an assessment of whether we are ready or not for nuclear. And yet the department won't give us the details of what's in that document, how they respond to the document. We're just told that there was an assessment done, it's not an audit, but we are taking action steps to remedy the situation. What's even stranger, Chair, is that that document hasn't even gone to cabinet. It was done 2 years ago, it's only going to cabinet now. When were action plans implemented? Under whose auspices were these plans implemented? Is the minister even aware of what the shortcomings were? Is cabinet aware of what the shortcomings were? Does cabinet even know where and how we're going to solve any of these issues? Again, not in the presentation, and Chair, I must admit right now, I'm not really feeling very high on the transparency measures in terms of how this is being handled. And frankly, I'm getting a bit of a whiff of arms your two or arms your people right now. Chair, that also goes for the international governance agreements. We're assured that they're completely non-controversial, and yet they still have not been presented to Parliament. We are waiting. Is there a date when these might come so that we can evaluate them? As parliamentarians, we are very tired of relying on second-hand information from the news media about what is and what is not contained in this document. If they're not controversial and you're committed to transparency, please provide them to Parliament and make them publicly available at the earliest possible opportunity. Chair, again, I just want to touch on the issue of the Deputy Director General spoke about studies on investment have been done. Again, why have these not been made publicly available? Where are they? What do they mean? So if thinking around funding is going on, we need to know what it is, Chair. We need to make it publicly available. The NDP as a plan for government will severely be undermined with the choice for nuclear, which means that we're taking state resources away from various other plans of government and pumping them into nuclear. That is the choice we're making. So social development, policing, all those other areas in our economy and in our government will be affected by this decision. And yet we don't know the size, we don't know the magnitude, and frankly, Chair, it makes it ridiculous, the whole NDP plan, if we take a decision that actually isn't supported by data, by economic modelling, about pricing, we have a huge problem. Chair, on point of clarity, we would very keen to understand what the procurement process will look like. The Minister has referred to the procurement process starting in quarter two, and that will be concluded by the end of the year. I'm very impressed that government can procure anything that quickly, considering that we seem to fail to do that in various other areas of government. So please, can the department clarify for us what is the government legislation? There seems to be some dispute over what that might be. Who will be responsible? Where will the procurement process be housed? Will it be housed with the National Nuclear Regulator, or will it be housed with the Department of Energy? And on the procurement process, we wonder then if the Minister has promised accountability and transparency, any ideas on how we're going to avoid an arms deal too. I'm hoping that the Minister will accede to a request by the Democratic Alliance for some kind of parliamentary oversight committee over the procurement process. It is fundamental that Parliament be directly involved and participate in the procurement process of what could be R1 trillion in South Africa. Chair, I'd like to move on to the NNR. I'm a little bit confused as to why the presentation of the NNR is being made by the department and not the NNR itself, or maybe I don't understand the institutional arrangement, but I would hope to think that there's a separation between the department and the regulator. much like to know what the shortcomings are in detail and some, with some kind of level of specification. Because it seems to me like there are severe capacity problems at the MNR that are being plastered over, that aren't being dealt with. For example, Mr. Mubber, how many of your MNR staff are actually qualified nuclear reactor operators? How many of them have actually worked in the field of nuclear science or actually worked at Kuberg? From my understanding of sources in the field, the MNR is very poorly capacitated and takes up to 2 years to complete some of its most basic functions. This is obviously not helpful considering that we're about to massively expand the number of reactors in the country. Chair, I'd also like to know if the MNR has any comments on a recent report by the World Association of Nuclear Regulators. It's also a peer review slash audit which is undertaken every 2 years. In the report, which we'd love to see firsthand, apparently the report identified key skill shortages within the nuclear industry, and that's specifically at Kuberg. It highlights inadequate management at Kuberg. It indicates that Eskom's cash-strapped nature is undermining the safety culture and ability to manage Kuberg safely, and it recognizes an overall decline of safety culture at Kuberg, which obviously is deeply, deeply worrying for all the concerned, not just those living around Kuberg, but also the ability of the MNR to respond to expanded regulatory requirements of jobs. Chair, I understand on the MNR, I'm deeply, deeply concerned. To my mind, I do not see a regulator that is robust. I see them fundamentally cracking under the pressure of a procurement process that will be rigorous and intensive. And fundamentally, I also question its ability, even with additional staff, which again, we're not understanding exactly how the skills are going to be met in that requirement, but of how are they going to effectively regulate another 6 to 8 reactors in South Africa. Thanks, Chair.
You have to be open, transparent. then you have to also explain to them step by step the way you are going. And to me, this the information I'm trying to find is all information that is anti-nuclear, and there's not much positive about nuclear around on the internet, and that's where people go and tend to find their information. So I think you are doing a dismal job in trying to give a positive picture, especially with the secrecy around everything. So I want to talk about the disposal of spent fuel. You talk about power pits and how the nuclear active material, the contaminated material, is buried under the ground. And today, you don't know what to do with the spent fuel at Kruger. It's in a pool here, it's stockpiled here. And we want to build 8 more reactors, and of which we will not know what to do with the fuel. And we just stockpile it, and we hope that someday something will arrive and we would be able to deal with that big pool of fuel that's there. And then, you know, what are you going to do if in 2023, as your report said, we will have to be decommissioned? Where is that fuel going to go to? I mean, it's not far from now. I think 2023 was 2032. Yeah, that's a decommissioning date. I mean, you know, it's just very funny that we don't know what to do with it, and we want to start building something as well. And that fuel is still there at Kruger, and it worries me quite a lot that it's sitting right at my backyard. And then, you know, all the different countries have different technologies. So if you are in China, you have a different type of technology of a nuclear reactor. In France is different, in America is different, and even Russia is different. So now we are sending these people to be trained, these students. We send them on 2 to 8 day courses, and we send them on 15 to 120 day courses to China to train for all these advanced courses. What does that mean? And another thing is, companies usually stick to the same technology as what they have done before, because they have learned lessons, and they have learned a lot, and people can be interchanged between different power stations if you build more. So now these people are being sent to China, and it makes me think that, you know, the technology type that we will be using, because like my colleague also said, if you are buying a car, you know if you're going to buy a 1300, a 1600, a 3 liter or a Bombardier plane to transport the president maybe, but you will know what you are procuring as government. You won't. You can't decide what technology we are. You must know that by now, and I think you should tell South Africa what it is. And it sounds like if we are sending the people to China, maybe that is the technology we will be using. I don't know. So that if, like I said, if you are ready to procure something, you at least know what you want to buy. You can't go on a fishing trip and hope, you know, a fish will bite. I also see you have committed the Itemba lab, which is also a reactor that's in Cape Town, in Thora, and Thora that also does, I think, medical. It is there for medical reasons. I see you have included them in the presentation, but you didn't say to what extent they will be involved. When we canned the Pebble Bed nuclear reactor project, how did that affect us losing our nuclear experience and nuclear ability? I think that project, we had a lot of nuclear physicists and people working on it, but they all left the country now to greener pastures and where they are able to actually do their work. I would like you to tell us how it will work. And then I read in the one Eskom report, and I see that diesel supply, this page is not a number, but it's an Eskom thing, and it talks about the Fukushima Daiichi accident, and on the bottom it says the main current weakness of Kubet is the need to supply of diesel fuel to the site to maintain power supplies under sustained loss of external power, and we currently have 48 hours of diesel fuel on site. And that's all we have. So we are able to sustain for 48 hours the pumps that actually house this nuclear spent fuel that we don't know what we want to do with it yet. And I mean, that is a disaster, too ghastly to The Indian gas turbines at Ankara and Acacia power station provide 62 kV backup electrical supply for Kuburg. These units and the associated transmission line became dedicated to Kuburg should the need arise. Now, we are running them at full tilt to supply power to the South Africa, and my common sense tells me that if you run something at full blow now, the time when you need it and the time when there is a blackout, they will also be blacked out. They will also not be working. And if they are dedicated for Kuburg, how does this affect the whole, we have a doomsday plan and a doomsday scenario. How does that affect it? And why are we not fixing that problem of the 48 hours of diesel on site? I mean, we must just, it's just very worrying that it's right here and we are not dealing with those and we want to build new power stations. I mean, thank you very much.
Trillions that
will be from all cost the taxpayers in South Africa. I think, Chair, those are few questions which I share for now. Then I'll look on other questions if there are any follow-ups. But what I want to put across, Chair, is that it is said that the minister does not want solar energy. I don't think that the minister would defy the president. In his State of the National Address 2004, President made a statement, a point that in South Africa we are moving towards, or we are for, energy mix. And this energy mix, it includes this nuclear that we are so obsessed about as a committee. It's not an isolation of nuclear. And already, there are solar plants across the country, about 37, if not more, of them, that are in operation. So to say in newspapers that the Minister of Energy does not want this particular energy source is rather mischievous, or probably people suffer from denialism of the fact that government is actually doing something when it comes to issues of energy in our country. So I'm responding to these because they are out there in the media, because our portfolio committee started long ago through the newspapers. But because we are not spokespersons ourselves, this is a correct platform for us to correct all the myths that is out there, which in fact the people who put it on the media know about all the facts behind the whole myth that they decided to put out to the media. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think you will remember nuclear is one of my pet research projects. Although I have no objection to the development of nuclear energy as part of South African energy mix, we need to offer spending over 1 trillion rand that current implemented part of the nuclear program on a nuclear program which is more than 3 times the price of a blue bean completely combined. Yes, we're going to deliver the same amount of electricity. This is truly a wise way to spend South African taxpayer money. And I will say yes. We must not make the same mistake as Eskom for the last few years not spending more, not planning for tomorrow. We must think of the future of this country, children, family. Honorable from the honor said that he's quite uncomfortable with having the nuclear fuel in his backyard. I would rather 10 times rather stay next to a nuclear plant than to a coal firing operation that runs ash and sits down for kilometers. And on the presentation on a nuclear, on page 5, it said jobs during operational period of 80 years. I think that's a bit ambitious. A nuclear plant's maximum life is about 60 years. Nuclear, on exposed nuclear, on ensure security of supply, etc. But I have two, nuclear energy is a more powerful and more efficient way than anything, than any alternative energy, and a most reliable also. It can produce power 24/7 with very little maintenance. planted very high, the cost of uranium or fuel that is used is very low, and it's quite freely available. It requires also a very little amount of uranium. Any one of this petite ladies here has 28 grams of uranium that they can hold in their one hand, releases as much energy as 1,000 metric tons of coal. And that is really something, and that is much to transport. And of course there's challenges, of course there's challenges. Nuclear waste can never be seen lightly. But luckily everyone learns, Fukushima, everyone learns from what happens. A nuclear waste produced is actually a small in comparison with the toxic waste produced currently in this country and all over the world. Nuclear waste, I think, is about 80,000 tons to about 300 million tons. Only 0.1% of that is actually radioactive. Of course, the mining is not uranium oxide concentrate for mining, or yellow clay as it is called, is of course not toxic. It's only when it turns into a gas that it's enriched. For disposal, we've learned that everyone's learned, and now even in Japan, they recycle the old nuclear waste. Reprocessing has already been done in Europe, and France, I think, and Russia. And Japan is building an 800-ton reprocessing plant in Rokara Shore in Japan. On the next presentation, I just want to ask, we've heard even in this oversight committee that this nuclear body faces financial meltdown. The core of this, of NESCO, is actually the 100 scientists and about the 40 engineers that it employs. So how does this also, with your skills development, how do they fit? Are they still employed, the scientists, all engineers? And even the financial difficulties that NESCO presently has, that we hear they are unable to pay the cooperation fee to the National Nuclear Regulator. And this is placing the accreditation of the nuclear scientists at a risk. You know, this is just could cause a skilled exodus on the eve of this planned nuclear bomb. In closing, Chair, if we are going to commit these substantial funds to investing in nuclear energy, it should not be for consumption only, but to yield additional benefits through becoming an exportable commodity. Nuclear war program should be based on and only proceed if supported by an extensive and detailed cost-benefit analysis. That the long-term benefits will outweigh the cost. And this is also possible. This is also possible. We've got neighboring countries here in Nigeria, which is taken up much economical with all their oil and natural resources, that's suffering from energy. They will buy anything that South Africa can and would be able to produce. Thank you, Chair.
only in the context of South Africa's growth trajectory, but the forecast of and what the energy needs are going to be. And in fact, what migration to base load and the fact that we're going to be decommissioning at some point. So how do you deal with those big questions about, so what are the alternatives? So it's not as if these are just easy choices, like that. So there are issues.
Options that can provide the base load that we require in South Africa. nuclear to provide the base load. We've got coal, which currently provides about 90% of the country's energy. But we took a decision as government that we want to reduce the coal contribution because of the reason that we want to reduce the carbon footprint of the country. And hence, when we look into the integrated resource plan, coal will contribute less than nuclear, will contribute less than renewables by 2030. And so, if you have coal, we want it in abundance to our country. But I've highlighted that we need to reduce our carbon footprint to make sure that we can comply with our international obligations in terms of carbon emissions. One source that then comes quite clearly to provide the required base load that we will be reducing is nuclear. Provides clean energy, provides the base load, cheap electricity, and it's got a lifespan, designed lifespan of 6 years, and it's got, you can extend this power plant into another 20 years, so you've got an 8 year period of an asset that requires a significant capital injection for a start, which as a country you must pay, say, within 20 years. Once you have paid up this investment, then you reap the reward. The return on investment becomes huge. That is why we've highlighted the example that is, we've got the Kube nuclear power plant as the most efficient and profitable power plant within the Eskom fleet. And if we go forward with a nuclear plant, there was a question here which was asked by the honorable members as to how many reactors are we going to procure. In terms of the current technologies, we're going to procure a 9.6 gigawatts of nuclear power. And this, you could roll it out in terms of anything from 6 reactor units up to 8 reactor units, depending on the type of technology we will select when the procurement process has been finalized. So, if we're going to have this huge problem, it means the government will have assets that will provide electricity for more than 6 years, just providing profits for the state. And indeed, that will then bolster the economy of the country. Because for the nuclear building program, we are not only looking at buying the nuclear power plants, but we are looking at creating an industry through the manufacturing of the components that will be used into the nuclear power plants. And so it becomes very critical to industrialize South Africa. And that's the superior advantage that we get when we deploy the nuclear building program. We are not only generating power through the nuclear power station, but we are creating the industry, stimulating the mining, stimulating the manufacturing sector, stimulating the skill development. We become self-sufficient through the use of baseload electricity, clean, cheap electricity. We only require initial investment to put it through, and when we operate it, it's got low costs related to fuel, low costs related to the maintenance, longer life span for the nuclear power plant. So it pays it back within a 20-year period, and it becomes a cash cow operating going into the future, 8 years that's a case for nuclear and the industrialization. And then there was a question around that, around the transparency as to why the IAEA, the annual report for South Africa, is classified when other countries are not classified. And it is important that we highlight that we receive the report and it is going through government processes to make sure that it is presented at the right levels of decision making. Cabinet needs to be appraised with the report, the outcome, and the work that as a country we have done to deal with this. And it is at that stage, until this report has been discussed by cabinet and cabinet pronounced and take a decision on it, it is still in the government process. And that we must be able to wait for this process to run its course. The question was raised as to the presentation of the intergovernmental agreement that they need to be presented to Parliament. And indeed, our minister has committed that in the next few weeks, these intergovernmental agreements will be presented to Cabinet and the parliamentary process associated therewith will then unfold. And so they will be going to Parliament. And there was a question as to where the financing for the program will come from. And Honourable Chairperson, it's a very important question. And as a department with National Treasury, we have done extensive studies. We've done the financing models for the program. We've done the financing for the owner-operator. Optimal structure. We've looked into the update of the cost studies, and all of this work is informing the government decision-making process so that government will then be in a position to say this information is sufficient for making the decisions. But it is important that one must acknowledge that this thorough work has been done. It will not be in the best interest of the government to start releasing this information while it's still undergoing the necessary processes. Because it needs to serve in cabinet and cabinet needs to take a decision on what has been determined. What we have done is that it has clearly indicated that government has got a sufficient basis, sufficient benchmark of information that enables government to proceed on these decisions. And also, crucial for the honourable members to appreciate is that we are still going to start a procurement process. And if you, for strategic reasons, you need to be able to say you've got sufficient information, but you're still going to engage with the market. And when you engage with the market, you engage it on the basis of a benchmark that you've got, and when you negotiate to finally come up to a final decision, that's when you come up with the actual cost. Because you'll only know the actual cost once you've got the information from the bidders who are telling you the exact cost of their technology. At this stage, all that you can give will be estimates and benchmarks. And we need to be cautious in doing that, and we give estimates on prices which may end up being different when we actually engage in the actual procurement process, because we would have got the actual information that the various bidders are putting for that technology. So that's important to note. And also, the question was saying, there is a misalignment between the IRP 2010 and IRP 2015. 2013. The IRP-2013 is still a draft document, and that document has never been approved by cabinet. And the existing government-approved IRP is the IRP 2010-2020, which is the IRP that we are currently implementing as a government-approved document. And we have been able to roll out the renewable program in line with the IRP, and we have been able to engage on hydro. We signed the grant to make sure that we prepare to also roll out the hydro power. And similarly, we are rolling out the nuclear build program in line with this approved IRP. And there is no contradiction in that. We are implementing the IRP that's been approved by government. The draft IRP remains a draft until such time it's been approved. And this IRP is still in the draft stage and it has not been approved. And therefore, the work that we need to do is to make sure that the approved document is implemented and it's got all the energy mix and implementing the entire energy mix in a coordinated manner to make sure that government has an energy solution that is informed by its approved policies. The contradiction that the honorable member pointed out, the MEC correctly says we need to do further investigation on the nuclear, so that when final decisions are made, there's thorough information that informs the decision. And we've correctly been following the IRP in terms of what the NDP, in terms of what it requires as a department. I've highlighted that the department has done extensive work, which started more than 8 years, in terms of developing technical strategy that inform the technical decision, the technical decision making process to create a framework that informs government rule. And so there is no contradiction with what we've done. We've done thorough work into all the aspects that are being called for by the NDP, because we've set up six technical working groups that address all the 19 key milestones, nuclear milestones that are identified in the IEA methodology. And the honorable member correctly pointed out that the NDP first, we need to do a thorough investigation on safety of the technology, we need to do a thorough investigation on the issues of skills development and localization, thorough work on the industrialization, thorough work on the environmental impact assessment, thorough work on the non-proliferation issues and safeguard issues, and indeed, thorough work on the financing and the cost of the project. And indeed, all this work has been done through this technical working group for government and government nuclear sector. And this is this work that informs the decision-making process of government. The informed amendment is indeed all we do is addressing the call for the national development plan that says do the thorough investigation so that when the final go or stop decision is made, we want the extra cost. And all of this is being done. Financing and procurement, there was a question as to who will be responsible for this procurement. We've presented in the plan that the Department of Energy will be the procurement agent for government as the lead into this program. And there was also the clarity sought as to where will this be housed? the Department of Energy will establish a program management office which will deal with this to manage the procurement for government, obviously working with the nuclear state-owned entities that are the implementing agent for the government. There was questions around NMR capacity to deal with the demands of the nuclear bill program, and that was questioned. And I need to provide assurance to the committee here that we've got one of the most advanced regulators with an international recognition. The regulator is capacitating itself in a much more measured way. The honorable members would have noted that the regulator has grown by 23%, that is from 95 to 125, growing its resources. And in doing that, the regulator is phasing in the required resources to make sure that we could license the nuclear power plant. It's important to recognize that it will not be prudent for the regulator to create a bloated structure when a decision on the project has not been announced. Now, what the regulator is doing is that on a phased approach, it's training the people to make sure it's ready. It's got bilateral agreements that it's leveraging on with the renowned nuclear countries, the US, the France, Russia, China, and all of this. Through this international collaboration, our regulator is strengthened. And also, it is in a position to build in the capacity that was required for the rollout of the nuclear bill program. Then there was a question around the nuclear material that was found in Cape Town and how do we protect our borders? Have we got the radiation monitors around our borders? This is a matter that is controlled. We have sufficient systems in place in the country to deal with the protection of nuclear material. We're a member state to the IAEA. We have a signature to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And there is work that is ongoing to protect our borders to ensure that nuclear material is detected. There is projects that have been ongoing between South Africa and the IAEA in terms of installation of the radiation portal monitors around our borders to detect nuclear material. As we speak, a team of South African experts has gone to learn in other international countries which have implemented the system of radiation portal monitors to also gain the lessons learned so that when we roll out the system in the country, we indeed and we also have done benchmark with other countries. So this area is adequately addressed, and of course there is systems in the country that are looking to make sure that we strengthen our nuclear security to ensure that when we roll out the program, the issues of proliferation of radioactive material are addressed. We've got NEXA as our government entity responsible for the non-proliferation issues and the implementation of the safeguards agreement, and we've got various security agencies that also deal with matters of nuclear security. We've got the laws that deals with this. These various countries, institutions are identified as national key point facilities, and therefore strict security requirements are applied and are being adhered to. Then there was a question as to what technology is South Africa going to buy. I've addressed this Honorable Chairperson by saying that we will determine the technology when we have completed the procurement process and we have identified the dealer or the strategic partner that will provide the technology. So that decision is still coming. However, the Honorable Member was asking whether we're sending students to train in China. Have we already decided that we're going to buy the Chinese technology? No, that decision has not been made. We are training the people to gain the necessary training, because the training is generic in terms of the reactor technology. It differs in some aspect when it comes to the operator's training, but the rest of the science is applicable to a range of nuclear technology. And so, when we provide these opportunities of sending students to train in different countries, it should be understood from the context that there is no technology selection that has been made of a particular country where we're sending these people. It's only going there to gain the generic training that is offered there. And they've been trained in highly advanced universities that make sure that these countries become the leading nations. And so it is our aspiration that we also become a leading nation. And so we're sending our people to gain this knowledge in different countries. But those countries where these people go have not yet been selected that they will be technology suppliers. There was a question that the Itemba Labs, and the question was, to what extent will Itemba Labs be involved in the nuclear program? And indeed, Honorable Members, the government is rolling out this program to make sure that all the relevant government state-owned entities participate in the program in terms of implementing their roles. And so Itemba Labs, as one of the key government SOEs, will also be involved because it's dealing with research and development in the area of medical isotopes. So it will be involved in the program to make sure that it takes part for the rollout of the program in its own role. Then there was a matter raised by the Honorable Mohamed Salah, which sought to get clarity that the IEA says South Africa is deficient in 40% of the 19 milestone, nuclear milestone. Honorable Member, I wish to highlight that the INIR, the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review process, is a qualitative process. It is not a quantitative process. Therefore, the numbers that have been mentioned, we can clarify that in terms of the process, it's a qualitative process, and it will not be talking about numbers as to how many percentages did each country obtain of the 19 key milestones. And also, it is not an audit. there was a question to say who will be responsible to pay for the project, what is the contribution of state into the project. We're still investigating these matters. However, we're looking into the different sources of funding in the market. We're looking into project financing with different financing options and different banks, different financing options, and those will then be in future be determined once a decision has been taken of a procurement. Honorable Chairperson, I'd like to thank you.
Because we would have to go through capital processes first. Chair, that happened at the end of the fourth parliament.
The department gave the undertaking to members of parliament, of the full parliament, to provide them with that document. So the president and the minister are all going on nuclear, but you can't process the INIR report and make it available to South Africans. So I'll ask you also about whether it's qualitative or quantitative. You're assessed on 19 categories. In the category, you can use words to say, you do not meet standard, you are deficient. It doesn't have to be a number, it can have to be a percentage. And as far as we can tell from sources who have seen that report, inside Eskom and inside wherever else, that report clearly indicates that there are significant challenges to South Africa's civil nucleation expansion program. Chair, this point on the NDP versus the IRP is not merely academic, right? The NDP clearly references an IRP document which the government claims is not government policy. So does the IRP 2010 supersede the NDP, which is the binding policy of government? Where are we standing? This is not just a point of which report is right. It's fundamental to the question of, is this a political decision you're taking for political reasons, or is this actually a policy implication based on data and economic facts and the actual demand for electricity? Chair, the department and the minister like to reference the 2010 IRP, and I want to just read something to you here, based on a 2011 article. In May 2011, the Department of Energy gazetted the Integrated Resource Plan 2010, which maps out the electricity generation pathway for the next two decades. When this plan was run through the Department of Energy's computer modeling program, the result was that the most cost-effective plan, which also met our carbon emissions and security of supply constraints, did not include nuclear. The department then reinserted nuclear power as a matter of policy, basically because we have a policy on nuclear and we need to use it. So even when the minister and the government keep referring to the 2010 documents, the Department of Energy has clearly indicated before that their own modelling indicates that nuclear is problematic in terms of cost, and we should rather consider other alternatives first.
Energy Act 14. flagship program for us to procure energy. We have procured 4,322 megawatts in less than 4 years through the ICT program. Program and our comprehensive response is to have affordable energy and renewable energy. That's our immediate response and a combination of energy supply and demand option. Our response is also to bring in the private sector and private participation in these initiatives. The private participation is what made the ICT project a success. Open, transparent, tender processes made the ICT project a success. Now, if we use the ICT project as a benchmark, the first step in procurement was the request for information. We are following the process of request for information through the vendor parade and through the various interactions with different governments. The second benchmark to the ICT is the request for proposals. That is when the ICT presents to us the funding models, cost of funding, and various other options which are being evaluated. So let's get back to nuclear energy. The IAEA report would be part of the roadmap for implementation and for the next steps. Part of the current step, when we ask the IAEA to do a report, remember the nuclear program started way before this term of office. So when we ask for the IAEA report, it's part of us asking an international objective body to evaluate our weaknesses and our shortcomings, but also to make recommendations. Strengthening our institutions and our capacity happens to be part of those recommendations. DG Romano from the IAEA has been to our country. He was here again this year. We'll be meeting again later this month to update us on what our processes have been. We can update him, as well as his international benchmark for what it is we still need to do, what it is we still need to do to respond to the recommendations of the report. We've also requested DG Romano of the IAEA to give us international experts to monitor this process step by step from a totally technical perspective, procurement perspective, as well as looking at the expertise that is required along each and every step. The EIA, Environmental Impact Assessment, has become a major focus area in the roadmap. We are working with the Department of Environmental Affairs, DPE, to spell out the EIAs, Environmental Impact Assessments, and with those EIAs, it is very critical for us to take public comment and public opinion into perspective. Those EIAs, once completed by Environmental Affairs and approved by Environmental Affairs, cannot just be taken at face value without inputs from communities and all stakeholders, including our various experts, before we can start on the process of choosing sites. We're so far from choosing those sites. So those sites will also be chosen along with requests for proposals. The treasury funding model, again, the best model we have had, including outside partnerships. partnerships or private partnerships the best model we've had thus far, the model of the IPPs. Funding was acquired for those IPPs through public-private partnerships, but basically through PPAs or power purchase agreements. Once Eskom gave the IPPs power purchase agreements, they could raise capital on the global market, but most of the capital for the IPPs was raised from commercial banks in South Africa. What is our concern? The concern we have raised with the IAEA, which acts as a monitoring body for what it is we seek to do, our processes and our roadmap, is one, looking at the total project value, the means during the construction measurement period, capital costs, the costs of services procured for the construction of the facility, the finance charges, the land costs, mobilization of fees to the operations contractor, the cost payable to the distributor, the network transmission costs, whether the contractor can do the distribution connection work, the transmission connection, the entire value chain until we get to the consumption per household based on Eskom data for the residential sector. So a detailed mapping exercise including the equivalent of full-time employment opportunities for one person per year, what the technical expertise will do, what that will cost us, to the opportunities for welding. So there's high level very technical skills to skills which we discovered when we did the DP and Kusile, we thought we had in our country, but which we ended up importing. Welders, we ended up bringing welders to our country when we thought we had welders. Part of the procurement process is also to look at the local content. The local content is to achieve industrialization and to ensure that there's local content during construction. What percentage of the content, materials will be imported, what percentage will be locally procured. If we need to procure locally, what would need to be grown, which industries would need to be grown, and what are the jobs and business opportunities which create. On the job years, during construction, looking at what the job years would be, the job years during the operation, we are disaggregating the employment opportunities for South African citizens. I think that was an afterthought when we did the IPPs. The training of South Africans, intellectual property which belongs to South Africans, and the long-term ownership of the facility, and the long-term funding model, which means that when the final funding model requests for proposal, are returned to us, that will be part of the criteria when we assess those proposals. The risk and risk mitigation. According to risk, we will have to meet global international safety standards. And central to the procurement process is how we mitigate global and international safety alerts. Those safety alerts an evaluation from what we currently have to where we seek to go. There are substantive issues which again will not be overlooked. The technical oversight cannot be emphasized. When we do the business model, it will be a competitive business model. So the cost analysis across the entire value chain will be assessed. That competitive budgeting process will also be interpreted by the IAEA, as we will be discussing with DJ Romano in the NDP. So when we look at the NDP vis-a-vis the nuclear renewable program, let us not be focused on a very narrow perspective of the NDP. Let us look at the economic growth potential of this project and how we unlock the project for South Africa Incorporated. South Africa Incorporated, of course, must have as much information as possible. So we are inviting South Africa Incorporated to go to Pelindaba, to go to Kuberg. Next, on the 14th of June, we will host the AU Heads of State Summit. The AU Heads will go to Pelindaba. There's a huge interest in what we are doing in the nuclear space, in the continent, and globally. Lastly, I have to add 2 points, is the advancement of new technology, research and innovation. The DGI is investing with EXA in skill development for new technology, for new businesses to be created. When it comes again to the tariff and the tariff structure, we will bring two parliament and two cabinet, the Energy Regulator Amendment Bill, which seeks to give us an appeals authority to NERSA. Because what happens now is that if NERSA issues a license or a tariff, there's no appeals authority to companies which wish to appeal or institutions which need to appeal for or against a license or a tariff. Certainly, the renewable energy IPPs were quite informative in terms of how cost-reflective tariffs were used to fund the IPP program. We have learned, I think we cannot just use the Medupi Kusile model as a future model for our country. Yes, it is a model where we have to learn lessons. There are lessons to be learned through that model, but likewise, there's lessons to be learned through the success profile, the success rate, and the success strength of the IPP. The legislative framework is being evaluated, and I encourage the members to look at the legislative framework as it exists and not only the IRP. The IRP will be updated to include responses to our energy challenges. Once we are updating that IRP, the IRP 2030 doesn't take us out of our energy challenges. The IRP that we need now is the IRP that must take us out of our challenges. The gas utilization program, again, is limited to what we had projected. At that stage, we did not project that these challenges would be there. Those were the shortcomings of our policies. Those were the shortcomings of even the IRP 2030. We have to admit that. If our IRP 2030 was the perfect document, then some of the solutions would have been found. Unfortunately, we are moving at a rapid pace with the gas. We'll be back in Mozambique this week. I go back to Mozambique on Friday, particularly to look at how we can expedite the procurement of gas and the procurement of other energy sources. The nuclear renewable program is a long-term investment for our country. But this portfolio committee cannot be charged for taking short-term immediate decisions at the expense of not doing long-term planning. Our immediate decisions will be based on how to address the challenges there in the shortest space of time, but the most important. cost-effective way. And to facilitate, take and expedite this, you would have noted that I reopened all of the windows for renewable energy. So projects which are ready to be announced have been often re-evaluated. Generally, there are projects which really have to be tweaked here and there. And those projects we will also announce as soon as possible, including the 13 outstanding projects of the bid window 4, which did not qualify during the announcement we made in April. I ask that we make, that our bid adjudication committee looks at those projects again, and we can allocate them as soon as possible. So the success story remains the renewable energy ICTs, and that would be the kind of model that we will look at even for the gas. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, most honorable members. That concludes the business of the committee. The committee will now rise.
Thank you.